All right, 405, we'll start. Yesterday, we talked about the fact that aging does happen. It starts at conception, goes all the way through life. It's a constant change. What are the words you remember from yesterday that I repeated a lot?
It's an adaptation.
Adaptation. You know, that seems to be the word of the day. I've had three people talk to me about that today. Mm-hmm. The whole idea that we adapt as we age. I hope the other one you picked up is choices and not being a victim.
Yeah.
And so today we're just going to have some fun talking about wellness and other things. Now here comes the grand experiment. As you listen to this PowerPoint, listen for themes of what we've talked about. Listen for themes that you think might apply to aging, okay? This is a song, so, you know, bounce along if you like. Emma, are we ready to try it?
Yeah, if you want to.
So here we go. Or what's his name that jumped out of the airplane up here with millions of dollars?
D.B. Cooper.
D.B. Cooper.
Yeah. Don't admit that that's who you are. All right. So what did you think of what themes jumped out for you? It's a fun little song. In fact, the music director at our care center taught it. I couldn't believe it. got the memory care unit to sing that to me on the day I turned 64. It was really kind of fun. So what'd you hear?
A question.
Mm-hmm. Which one?
Is anybody going to need me?
Yeah.
Or love me.
Or love me.
Or take care of you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Adaptation, also.
Where did you hear adaptation?
Fill the garden, weed, who could ask for more?
Yeah.
Changing a fuse.
Yeah. You hear a lot of those kind of themes in this song. Do you think they're real? Real questions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are. They are. What is my worth as I get older? And, you know, as long as we're working and being productive and doing all that kind of stuff, we don't usually question it. We don't always like what we're doing, but we usually at least find that we have some kind of value in what we're doing. But when we get 64 and older and start thinking about that retirement, oh, does that change things? And brings about lots and lots of questions. And I have a little handout that I want to use, and I'm going to let that thing die on its own because I'm afraid I'll turn it on again. So.
I have a question while you're doing the handout.
I'm trying to stand up, you mean? Yeah.
How old are Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr right now?
They're in their 70s at least.
I was thinking at least 70s, and how ironic that they thought 64 was.
Mm-hmm. That meant, of course. Well, but remember the era. Mm-hmm.
Don't trust anyone over 30.
Don't trust anyone over 30, and now we're in the era. Don't trust anyone under 30. Yeah. You know? The generational battles just keep going on, and is this annoying anybody? I think it'll shut itself off. I don't have it. Oh wait, no, I do. Let's see. So coming out of the era that it came out of, 64 was old.
That's true.
Pick that date and said 65
when
you get Medicare or something.
Well, you know why the Medicare was set at 65 for retirement, right?
Nope.
That was lifespan. They never expected to pay anything out on Medicare because people were dead by 65. That was just in case you lived past. And of course now, lifespan is, what, 83, I think, for U.S.? It's higher in some other countries, but, you know, that's part of the reason we're, the whole financial, you can just set it there in case others come in, thank you. The whole financial thing is kind of shaky right now because they didn't expect to pay out this much. And then when Medicare was added, you know, that made it even a bit more fragile, so... So 64, really today, you know, they say 60 is the new 50, which I think is an age-denying statement, but I'll just let that one go. Because at 70, I kind of like to think that 70 is the new 60, except I'm not doing as much as I did when I was 60, but that's another topic. All right, today we're exploring wellness. And as I told you yesterday, there's nothing... In anything that we're talking about, it really applies to any age groups. I used to use this model with college students who are getting ready to move into professions. It can be used with junior high kids. It can be used because what we're talking about is life wholeness. Aging keeps going, but if we're going to live boldly at 70, we hopefully can learn to live boldly at 30. And 70 is just kind of a different expression of that. Now, this model was developed by the Inter-Lutheran Council on Aging and Wellness. No, not aging, it was on wellness. And they were looking for a model that would kind of guide a biblical model of wholeness and how we might construct our life. It's really also a good stewardship model, caring for the creation that God has made and gives to us. And so the whole thing is premised on a spiritual well-being. To be truly whole, to be truly well, is really a spiritual function. As I would say, like Rob Bell, everything is spiritual. But this is helping us see that wellness is spiritual. And right at the very center, hello Linda, right at the core is here in a Lutheran concept, in baptism, a new creation in Christ. Now this model is used extensively by other groups. For example, the health clinic at USC uses an orange in different shapes and has the same number of segments. So everybody uses, I've seen one as a gingerbread man. That people use different pictures to express this, but this is how they chose to do it for the Inter-Lutheran Council. This center in some models is just, you know, your core beliefs, you know, that kind of a thing. And if you've done any weightlifting, you know that core training is essential for the rest of the body. So the whole kind of thing about core is it drives the rest of it. I'm going to kill that fly. And so we look at this from a Lutheran standpoint and say that baptism is right at the core. Now, it's not the salvific approach to baptism, although that's appropriate. This is saying that in our baptism, we have a certain ism. Ism. What are some ism words you can think of?
Socialism.
Communism, capitalism.
Catholicism.
Yeah. Alcoholism, workaholicism, quilt makingism. You know, whatever drives our life, whatever becomes our ism. And the ism can be broken down into three words that gives us a sense of our core. First is our identity. Who am I? Second is our security. Where do I find safety? And third is meaning. Where do I find meaning in my life? And a friend of mine who's a theologian says that if you find somebody's, in fact, I use this as a chaplain where people are not expressing their as Christian, I try to just chat with them and listen for where they find their identity, security, and meaning, because he says that defines your true God. That really defines your true God, not the creedal statement of the church, but where you find your identity, security, and meaning is your God. Now, if you find your identity, security, and meaning in your work, which many, 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 many people do, which is what makes retirement so difficult, you struggle with those things. Who am I now? What is my identity? Am I still a pharmacist even though I'm not working? And if I am, so what? What is that core for you? And so when we look at wellness and aging, it helps us to sit back and do some reflective work. And again, as I said yesterday, you do you. Your core is going to be different than my core. In terms of, I mean, we're both cored in Christ, but we each would express it differently. And as we transition through stages of life, that core gives us a sense of stability. If you take, John 13:3, which is really, I think, one of the most powerful verses in Scripture. It says that Jesus knew who he was, knew where he came from, and knew where he was going. Then he got up from the table, took off his garments, and washed feet. Knowing who he was, where he came from, and where he was going, gave him the power to take on the form of the lowest servant in the culture, to humble himself in ways. I mean, the disciples were going nuts that he was doing this. But he's showing for us how knowing our core empowers the rest of our life. I'm going to stop for a minute for reactions.
So you're making a connection between aging in that it could be successful as we age if we know those things. We know where we're going, who we are, and where we've been.
Yes, I would say that, although I probably would say it gives us greater clarity, a greater sense. I'm a Benedictine, an oblate with the community, and Benedictines talk about groundedness, and I think this is where we get our groundedness in our ism. And that's what gives us stability as we go through life. When it gets rattled, you know, I mean, I strongly identified as a parent, and the darn kids grew up. And then I had to relearn how to be a parent to adults. So I had to rethink, what is my role now? How do I parent adults and respect their adulthood? You know, and that kind of a thing. So it changes in how it's manifested, but the core stays the same. What do you think of it? Linda, was that a...
No.
Okay. Yes.
I think that personal belief in God, where you do it for your own self, gives you the ability to do all kinds of things, like love another human being, like be able to forgive, to get through addiction or whatever. It's the power that allows you to get somewhere, in my opinion.
Yes, I mean, let's say a person who's in the 12-step program might connect this to the higher power. I believe that's the term used. And so that becomes their core, their grounding. I'm going to get in trouble here, but I think maybe would Buddhists identify that as light? I'm not good at other systems as well. But whatever that core is, you know, if you're a Baptist, you wouldn't talk baptism in the same way as a Lutheran. But, you know, the core would be a personal faith in Jesus Christ. So you define it depending upon your system. Yes?
I think this is helpful even for organizations, families, or churches to be asking these questions, because I think this is why we're seeing such a decline, is because spiritual communities don't know who they are, or they find how they find safety, or how they find meaning. I think those questions could even be asked.
You are so absolutely correct, in my opinion. I always have to say that because somebody else might say something different. But I think you're right. And when you lose your core, you're like a little boat out in the waves bouncing around with no oars because you can't get a direction. And so I think, absolutely. I tried presenting this to our congregation last year quite unsuccessfully as an approach to stewardship instead of just talking about money. Let's talk about holistic living and how we give all of ourselves to God. Didn't play well, but that's all right. Seeds are planted. All right, so let's look then at how this continues to work. They break it down in these sub-points, which I think are very, very helpful. The one there at the top, and by the way, there, some of them have, what do we got here, 2, 4, 5? Some have 6 and some have 7. Like one of them that's not on here is financial. There's controversy whether or not that should be included, but I think it was probably Thrivent that influenced that a little bit. It's a valid point. But anyway, starting with social interpersonal well-being, there is an epidemic of loneliness among seniors. Now, there was a study done by Medica last year that blew me out of the water, because I've been working with little brothers, friends of the elderly, and with the Council on Aging in Place, and I was just a strong proponent of dealing with loneliness with seniors. We got to deal with seniors because they're so isolated. Medica research found that the group with the largest reported loneliness is young adults, 18 to 22, which just really surprised me. Then the second group was seniors, 65 and older. And the point of this is, as we age, we begin to lose family members, we begin to lose friends, either they move away or there's death, we used to say in the urban areas where they get so isolated in their residence that they're afraid to go out, but rural loneliness for seniors is probably even worse because you don't see neighbors often enough to do anything about it. So there's strong evidence that loneliness causes so much stress that it produces illness. Because when we're under stress, our white count goes down. Now, I've got a pharmacist sitting in here, so verify if I'm not telling the truth, gently kick me, okay? Thanks, Colin. But stress has a negative impact, whether it's positive or negative events in life. It causes stress on the system. And if we're lonely and we don't have a support system to help us through that, we're just left with strong evidence of illness that comes. And so, seniors become... I visited one woman from our church, and I saw her once a month, and sweetest lady, but I hope I'm not going to offend anybody. Well, she was watching a certain news channel whose news will scare the bejibe out of anybody watching it, okay? And she just watched it all day long. And when I got there for my visit, I had to sit there and watch it with her for a little bit, but then I tried to get her to turn it off so she could calm down so we could have a visit, because she was so worked up and so afraid. She was on 30 feet oxygen tube anyway, but wasn't going to go through going outside because they're going to kill her. And that is kind of an exaggeration, but that's true of many seniors. They're afraid to go outside. Now, this senior got that way last year because in Minnesota, it felt like we had more ice than we had snow. So I would tend to stay home a lot rather than go out and crack my head open. So there's a lot of causative factors for loneliness. We sponsored a luncheon with an LGBTQIA group in Minneapolis, and mainly seniors. This group is a group of seniors that have come together. And the interview was being done as kind of an assessment by some social service agencies about loneliness and about their community. It's just stuff I hadn't thought about in that community. For example, a lot of their friends, this is our age group is the one that a lot of people died from AIDS, for example. So a lot of their friends were gone. And a lot of their families still could not accept them because of their orientation. And so they really were left with not too many people to connect with. And my heart just broke when this one man shared. He said, I go weeks without hearing a human voice. And that kind of broke my heart, because his voice indicated he'd really like to have a human voice. And I said to somebody later, why doesn't he just go to a coffee shop and, you know, meet people? And then I was reminded that I'm an extrovert introvert, not an introvert extrovert. So I naturally would head to the coffee shop to meet somebody. But he's not that type. So there's lots of illness can cause people to be at home. There's a lot of causative factors about social isolation. And so as you plan for your future, and that's why I'm raising this up, what can you build into your life to keep you from becoming socially isolated? And those are just, let me just stop and get your reaction. What do you see as this isolation issue, and what can a person do about it? Yeah.
One is, what I've heard is research that people that have partners are healthier. They have
yeah.
people to come home to, talk about, fight with, laugh with, you know.
That's true.
With,
that's true.
Check in with. I mean, not everybody has that option, but.
Yeah.
There are different ways to have partners, too. Right?
Not yeah. Just, in this day and age, there's as many as we can think of. Yeah. Other factors.
Well, we were talking last night about the friends of mine that were retired, left Portland because they couldn't afford to live there anymore, and had moved to Missouri. And yeah, they can afford there; they have a good lifestyle, but they have no friends. They don't have a community, and that they didn't factor that in when they were doing the retirement. So. For me, when I'm looking to move and retire, is to make sure that I move to a place where I have a community already in place.
Yeah, I think that becomes an important factor. And I think I shared with you last night, I don't have many regrets in my life, but my grandmother lived in central Illinois. And she was beginning to decline, and the family would drive by her apartment and nobody would stop. Mm-hmm. But they would call me, like I'm supposed to do something. So being the over-functioning caregiver that I am, I moved her up to St. Paul, so to a nursing home. We couldn't have her at our house because there was too many steps. And so I placed her in a nursing home up there, and then she had a TIA. She recognized me, but didn't really know who I was. But she hadn't, her sister wasn't there. Her friends that used to call her every day were not there. And I was kind of a poor substitute. I mean, she recognized me, but it was not the same as when the lady she worked with for 40 years would give her a call. So you're right, that moving can just really be devastating.
Death of a spouse?
Death of a spouse at any age will do that. Yeah. Or divorce, you know. All of a sudden you're left alone, and in both cases you can, not always, but can become like a fifth wheel if you can't find a group of other singles to be with. So there's all those issues as well.
Retiring from a job where you invest too much of your life in the social aspects of the job, or just devoting yourself too much to a job and then retiring and not having it to go to anymore.
Exactly. And because that was your social network, that was your identity, that was, you know, lots of different things. Well, you get the idea.
Mm-hmm.
But as you look at your life in the future, it's reality for any of us. I live alone in an apartment. I don't know my neighbors. I've only been there 3 months, but, you know, unless you see them at the elevator, you really don't see them. So, I mean, I have to look at ways because I'm in a new neighborhood. Look at your life, how much you construct it. Then there's the emotional well-being, the segment that they have about that. Staying well emotionally. The suicide rate for men over 65 is only surpassed by men in their 20s. Depression is a huge issue with seniors. Now, it's not only situational, sometimes it's chemical, where the body, you know, goes out of balance. And I think it's going to get a little better because our current group of 80 and 90-year-olds, I mean, you'd rather go through a firing range than go to a counselor because of this, how they were raised. Now it's, you know, better. I think more of us in our 70s are more open to going to a counselor and dealing with our mental health issues. But, you know, my daughter is mental health intake for a major hospital in the neighborhood. It happens to be the hospital where we send our residents if they kind of go psychotic on us. And she has had people in the emergency room over a week because there wasn't a Jerry psych bed available. And this is Minnesota, okay? We've had to send them as far away as North Dakota to get treatment because there's such a shortage of beds, a shortage of workers, people that are trained to work with the elderly and some of the issues that come with mental health. So one wants to work hard to stay emotionally healthy. And there's many different ways to do that. And, you know, even to be in discussion groups, or a lot of the, I think in a way, you know, the 12-step programs is certainly a way for people to stay emotionally healthy. And Melinda.
Me?
Yeah.
Melody.
I'll get it yet.
That's okay.
I'll get it yet.
You can call me Mel. I tell the people that. That's a little bit easier.
Oh, yeah. That covers them all. All right. Pastor Mel, you brought up yesterday the importance of community.
Yeah.
And in mental health, community, I think, can be really, really powerful. The best thing I ever did was go through clinical pastoral education, and I didn't just go through one unit. I went four, Mel. Okay. Stripped raw, but it was so healthy and renewing, and it revitalized me to the point that I almost wish I could have a permanent CPE group. But we want to have a plan. Work with your doctor. Now, way too many doctors are not trained in geriatrics, and they're not always really trained in mental health. But you can find resources if you're in an urban area. If you're in a rural area, it's a little harder, but the county would have sources. But this is an important part of well-being as we age. Now we have the physical well-being. As they say now, sitting is the new smoking. Who comes up with these phrases? But you know, it's true. My doctor lectures me, keep moving. And I have back and foot issues that, you know, sometimes have me hobbling around a bit. And I, quite frankly, there are days that I go, oh, let me just sit in a wheelchair and somebody push me. This makes me tired. But I can't let myself do that. Physical well-being. What are you doing to maintain your health? Now this, can I share?
Yeah, I know where you're going with this.
74.
Yeah.
And she's going to be running a marathon in Hawaii.
Wow.
Right?
The Honolulu Marathon.
The Honolulu.
Okay, good one.
Okay, I don't know why that's just because it's Honolulu.
Well, but it was my first one 40 years ago.
And rumor has it this is your last one?
This is my last one.
Yeah. But a marathon at 74. Now I'm just I'm excited to get here from the dining hall, you know. But, you know, I don't know, what is your training? How do you train for that? Just
I
run?
I have a little schedule, yeah. 8 to 12 miles a day. Which is going to be hard up here a little bit. I might get lost.
Well, you know, if a bear pops up, that could give you some motivation.
I'll take friends with me.
Okay. But physical well-being. Everybody's going to age differently physically. There's no doubt about it. We're not all the same. And while God bless you for doing a marathon, I think that's amazing. It's also important to walk around the block. Get up and walk. Yes, Greg.
I had a coworker a number of years ago. I'm a mechanic and I'm busy all the time. My coworker was the equipment manager, and he was about 10 years younger than me, and he was somewhat overweight. But his job almost all day long was sitting at the computer. But occasionally, I was shorthanded, and so he would come out in the shop. Oh, let me back up a little bit. And he was always sick. He had a cold, he had the flu, he just didn't feel good today or whatever. And so when I was shorthanded out in the shop, he would come out and help me. And every time he did that, he wasn't sick.
Yeah.
He would spend 2 days or a week out in the shop working on a project, and he was never sick when he done that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
He went back to the office and he was sick the next day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, physical well-being. Diet, people. I'm terrified of the food chain. I don't understand it. I thought I did. But there's so much of our food that's been corrupted. To research what should we be eating, sugar is death. Sugar negatively impacts the brain. It's seen as a correlation to dementia. It's seen as a correlation to just about any brain disease. It's cancer feeds off of sugar. I was amazed to find that out. Sugar is death. And so while some of us may be craving a different kind of food right now, the food here is extremely healthy. And to keep that in mind, what we put in our bodies does affect our bodies. And so be mindful of your diet. And if you need help, most clinics have a dietitian who can help you plan a menu. And I think even, I've not done Jenny Craig, I've done, on Weight Watchers, I've lost at least 3 people over the years. But you can get good advice on diet. But that's critical. And it's hard as we age, especially if we're alone. It's hard to cook for just one person. And so I cook batches, and if I don't have room in the freezer, I take it to my daughter with 6 kids. It'll get consumed by somebody. But just keep in mind how to go about doing that. Or invite people over for dinner, you know. Do potlucks at your house or whatever. But be mindful of your physical well-being. Vocational well-being is not your job. Vocation is your calling. You know, the who am I and what am I called, what gives me meaning. And so as we age, to find things that give me meaning. Now, some of you know I'm struggling about, I tried to retire at the end of this month, and so far where I work isn't going along with the idea. But I don't want to drive on ice. And so I said, well, then I'll be a fair weather chaplain, and so far they're not arguing with me. But even if I don't work there with memory care, I intend to volunteer in memory care close to my house. Because that gives me a sense of meaning and a sense of purpose. Other people do other things to find that meaning, but what gives you meaning as you do it? And you want to plan that before you retire. Have some sense of what your vocational calling is. If it's working with seniors, if it's working with children, schools need people to come in and read to or with children. I used to take my students to the Adult Education Center in St. Paul, and we would tutor people who had just arrived in the country to help them learn English. And, you know, there's so many needs. What brings you meaning? Don't just sit there, do something, okay? And then intellectual well-being. My residents live on Price is Right, Dr. Phil, what's the afternoon game show?
Wheel of Fortune.
Well, there's Wheel of Fortune in the evening. There's one other one they just love. This is not intellectual stimulation. Okay? Dr. Phil may appear to be, but not really. To find ways to learn new things. If you don't like to read, libraries have some wonderful programs that you know that they invite people to. I've taken some community education art classes, which were really kind of fun to learn how to paint. I'm now a certified Reiki practitioner because I took the Reiki training. Evidence is pretty strong that keeping the brain active, learning new things, develops our synapses even more so that if we get hit with, you know, Alzheimer's or dementia, there's stronger brain power there still left to function. Now, learning music. Music absolutely stimulates. And the latest thing I heard about is dancing. Go take salsa lessons, for Pete's sakes, or swing dancing. The Wabasha Salt Caves in St. Paul every Thursday night give swing dancing lessons. You know, don't just sit there, do something. And plan it out. I love that. I had a goal for 3 books this week, huh, Dana?
Mm-hmm.
What's your average for books?
Probably just 2 a month, 2 or 3 a month.
But you're still working full time.
Right.
Yeah. But lay that out for yourself. This week I've been walking around listening to people talk about what they're reading, and I've got a whole reading list for when I get home. Because, you know, it's something I'm a confessing, I've become a binge watcher of TV shows that I never got to see over the years. With West Wing, I hardly slept until I was finished. I love that show so much. And the idea is not to sit for more than 30 minutes, every 30 minutes to get up and move. Now, my mother would sit at the kitchen table all day long reading books, which meant she read for a while, and I always said she selected books by their thickness so she could get a high enough one to lean over and take a nap on the book. And that's what she did, you know. But it was fine. It was fine. But I said, Mom, set the timer on the clock radio so that it goes off after 30 minutes and you have to get up and walk into the bedroom and change and turn it back on again. And she thought that was a pretty good idea. But concentrate on movement, but still on intellectual well-being. Well, these are some ideas. The thing is, folks, it tends not to just happen. If we leave it to chance, we will, and most of us will sink to the lowest common denominator. And what we want to do is have a way to keep us moving. Again, community. I'm in a prayer group, and they're all hikers. And so one of the things I like on the days that we're through praying, and it's contemplative prayer, they want to go for a walk, and I get out there and walk with them. But I do better with a group, much better. And I would do much better if I had somebody to go to the gym with. And it's on the first floor of my apartment building. I don't even have to go outside. My children had pointed out to me I have no excuses left. And so it's good, because last year I was a member of a gym, and I used to go a lot, but the ice got so bad I stayed home. Well, it's not an icy elevator from what I can tell. So that's going to be my go-to place.
Yeah, but what floor are you living on?
No, I'm not taking the stairs. Well, I might. I mean, I'm fourth floor. There's no reason why I can't, you know. Yeah, take them down. Yes?
A couple months ago, I heard this beautiful story, too, of my organist mother and father. She was kind of in the dying process over several months between the nursing home and in the hospital and back. And her dad, they got him an Alexa. And so he took Alexa with her, with him, to the hospital when she was in the hospital, when she's in the nursing home, when she's in hospice. She loved music, so he would play her music for her. But Alexa became his friend through that process that he had to take Alexa, and now he has Alexa with him now after she's gone. And I just love that. I just never thought about Alexa, or whatever you name your device, but you know, you can ask Alexa what the weather is and play music, and it becomes, and I just thought that was really interesting.
Okay, I'm laughing because one of the first things I do every morning, hey Siri, what's the temperature outside?
It's 35 degrees outside.
Isn't that cool? So that determines whether I take my coffee to the balcony or the rocking chair. Yeah.
That's interesting. I kind of have a different feeling about that. I did elder care for my father, passed away. I'm now doing, my mother was very healthy, sharing with my sister. And I just heard that there's a huge push now for robots to take care of elderly people. And I really feel like this is just the opposite of what you said, that you found that to be wonderful. I find that to be really difficult for me. Mm-hmm. I think that is humans saying, I'm too busy to take care of mom. Mm-hmm. We have travel plans, or I have stairs in my house, or I've heard it all. I live too far away. And I just think it's a shame that we do that as a society, that we outsource our elder care to computers. That is not human touch. So I'm very obviously on the opposite side of the fence, and nothing against what you said. But I think it just heightens loneliness. And I think the reason why they found young people are lonely is social media and computers. It's distance from human touch. And I tell you, old people love nothing more than a human being with them, even if you don't know them. Mm-hmm. If you just talk to them, put your hand on them. It's so isolating at various stages of being elderly. So I kind of think we're missing something if we outsource our connection to humans, especially if they've given a lot to us.
Yeah, it's hard to know on that because I'm not familiar with the robotic approach to patient care. Pardon?
It's coming, big time.
Yeah.
There's big money in it. Mm-hmm.
And if it can free people up to be more human, that would be one thing. But you're right, if it isolates them even more, that can be a problem. And so these are things we have to look at, because I tell you, next summer, I'm here in September, and I got a whole week with ethics and aging. Mm-hmm. And there's more issues in ethics and aging than you can shake a stick at. And part of it, a lot of it, is technology. It's just changing the game to the point. And I'm a firm believer. I was talking with a pastor up here this week, and I said, how much time do you spend in visitation in your parish? And I had an ulterior motive with that. And he said, well, I try to do 5 or 6 home visits a week, which I'm going, yes. But he said, I get accused of being too old-fashioned. The pastors don't make calls anymore. And that was what I was afraid I was going to hear from him anyway. Because they're stuck on their computers and not out with people.
Just another quick thing. There's a really great retirement care facility in Seattle. It's in West Seattle. And they have combined, maybe other places have this too, preschools. Mm-hmm. And then they have the windows. So even if the elderly people cannot interact with the reading stories or whatever, they can at least see the kids in that mm-hmm. movement. They have the windows low. They're in wheelchairs. I mean, I find that to be, for myself, a better solution to loneliness than...
Well, the research is showing that when... And the place I work has that. We have a kindergarten preschool in the building.
Oh, wonderful.
Hospital stays go down when they've got children around. Now, not all seniors like children. Just like Gizmo at our place is going to be my death. We have an assisted living dog. And I come in, one of the things I do every Tuesday is bring in a batch of donuts. Yes, it's not healthy, but they love it. And that dog gets under my feet. I'm going to die. But, you know, those kinds of things really can make a difference. And again, I'm going out, and we'll talk more tomorrow, finding places for assisted living, etc., that I want to live in if I need that. And I'm giving the list to my children. And those are the kind of factors that play in. Well, we could go on. Anyway, get the idea of the wellness wheel? Mm-hmm. Use it to look at your life and plan. And I've learned that the bell has rung. You are gone mentally, if not physically. So have a great evening, and thanks for being here.